Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. And today's discussion is something that we cannot talk about enough. I know it may make a lot of people feel uneasy or uncomfortable, and it should. We're going to be talking about abortion, and in our society today, it has become so commonplace. A lot of people don't even flinch when they hear the word anymore because it's just become the norm. And to me, that's disturbing, and frankly, it's disgusting. Just the thought of it should make us all squirm in our seats. But this conversation will truly shed light on what the abortion industry really looks like in our culture and how we can win the fight against it. And I'm happy today that we've invited a very special guest to be with us. And I know many of our listeners will be familiar with her. Her name is Lila Rose. She's a recent graduate from the University of California, Los Angeles, with a major in history. It's a good thing that my dad's not here today because he graduated from USC. Yeah. My sister went there too, but we don't have to deal with that today. I went to Biola, so it's really all right for me. Lila's the founder and president of Live Action, which she founded at the old age of 15. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
15 years old. And you're 25 now?
24.
24. 9 years in.
9 years
My
in.
My goodness.
I was getting ready to retire.
Yeah, seriously.
Just kidding.
As a college freshman, you founded the pro-life magazine, The Advocate, which is now the largest pro-life student publication in the country. You're also known widely for a series of campaigns against affiliated facilities of Planned Parenthood. I appreciate you coming down to Family Talk today.
Thanks for having me on, Ryan.
Lila, I mean, you're only 24 years old. You've done so much. Really, it's countless. We only have one program today. We could go on for weeks for what you've done for the pro-life movement. How did you get your start? I mean, you started this at 15. How did you hear about this that drove you to say, you know what, it's not just that it's wrong, but I've got to do something about it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I was born and raised in San Jose, California, and I'm one of eight kids. So that should tell you something. I mean, my parents really loved, you know, children, and we were taught from a young age, I'm the third oldest, that babies are a gift. You know, we are taught to respect human life, I mean, from the elderly to the child. And so they instilled that sense of you know, awe in us that, you know, a child is a gift from God. My first encounter with abortion, though, was when I was about 9 years old, and this would really stay with me into my teen years and inspire me in many ways to start getting involved as I could. And, you know, I'd heard about abortion, as many children may in one way or another. I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
So one day in my home, I was looking for a book to read. I was a bit of a bookworm. I found a book on the bottom shelf in our living room called A Handbook on Abortion. Pulled it out, and I thought, oh, this book looks very old, you know, like a history book. But anyways, open the book up, falls to the center, and there are these images. And, you know, in horror, I close the book and I push it away. I don't want to keep looking. And then gathering up a bit of that courage, I pull it back, open it up, look again. And what I was looking at, Ryan, was the image of a child that was maybe 10 weeks old, first trimester, little arms, little legs, a newly forming little face who had been the victim of an abortion. And as I looked at that image, my little heart sank and I thought, is this real? Yeah. You know, is this really happening? And how can anyone do this to a baby? And then I started to, you know, ask my mom, I showed it to her. I said, is this really happening? My mom's closed the book. She says, yes, and that's abortion. After that, I started to learn more. I started to learn, you know, there are over a million abortions every year in our country, over 3,000 a day. That since 1973, Roe v. Wade, we're almost on 40 years now, somehow abortion became a constitutional right, even though it's taking away the most fundamental human right from the weakest member of society. And I just thought, you know, what can I do about this? Is there a way that I can get involved?
So where were your first steps?
Right. Well, I started to, you know, I read the book. And
did you really?
Yeah, I read the book, learned more
about it. And your parents said, you know, well, I guess you've already seen the images.
Yeah, and my parents, you know, they really trusted their children with knowledge and with the truth, I guess you would say. And I really am thankful to them for that. You know, we were homeschooled. We had a lot of opportunities to learn a lot of different things. And so at a young age, I started to learn about the world. I learned about other issues that we're facing, you know, issues of AIDS in Africa or poverty or, you know, wars between nations. And I realized, you know, I was raised in a very safe way, but that the world, a lot of people are hurt. There's a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. But I kept coming back to abortion as I learned more about it in my early teens. And so I started to pray, God, use me. You know, use me to do something
That's
about
a dangerous
abortion.
Prayer.
Exactly. It, Ryan, is a very dangerous prayer. because God's going to use you if you ask him to.
Mm-hmm.
And that really began this journey of getting together with friends. What are we going to do about abortion in San Jose, California? How are we going to educate our peers? And we started with that.
Lila, at the age of 14, you had a big turning point in your life. Can you tell us what that was?
Sure. About age 14, I thought, okay, it's time to start a pro-life club.
Okay.
And so that's when I got together with some friends in my parents' living room and just said, okay, what are we going to do about abortion in San Jose?
Now, did your friends know a lot about abortion, or were you the primary educator of your friends? Were you bringing the issue to them and then they saw the light as well?
I was a bit of an instigator.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were certainly amenable to the idea of learning more about it. And some of them became very passionate and started to really get involved. And our first step was to reach out to young people in the church. Because the reality is, Ryan, in the church, the abortion rate is the same as it is in the secular community. Catholics, evangelicals alike. And it's a heartbreaking reality that people that, you know, profess the name of Jesus are so hopeless and confused, and there's so much woundedness there. And so, you know, we thought if we could just give presentations showing visually and explaining peer-to-peer the reality of what abortion is as a human rights abuse against the Christian faith, and then also the beauty of the child and also the message of chastity, we can start to turn this thing around.
Sure.
And so we started by giving one presentation at a time. You know, we knocked on a lot of doors. So some pastors, I will say right out the gate, you know, they were like not too sure about this group of this motley crew of young, you know, kids saying, we want to talk about abortion to your youth group. And there was definitely some cautiousness from some of the pastors. But we built up a reputation by showing, you know, professional presentations, and we practiced. And so we started to get good access going into churches, high schools, and giving this presentation to other students. And then we'd have activism events, prayer outside the abortion clinics, you know, hip hop for life, different rallies around those presentations, and
sure.
we started to build a movement in San Jose.
Now, you're 14 at the time, 14, 15, 16.
Right.
How are the adults reacting to you as you're praying outside of clinics and giving presentations? You know, this seems like something that I would do as an adult. I would go and talk to kids and say, listen, I've been around the block. I know what's going on. I mean, you're peers and you're doing this. What's the reaction of the community and the adults around you?
Well, I mean, certainly we were tested in that the adults that we, you know, knew that were giving us access to their youth groups wanted to see the presentation ahead of time and meet with us. And we understood that. But generally speaking, there was a lot of support.
Good.
Because I think what we discovered, and, you know, my parents were very supportive, and what we discovered is that there was a real hunger for the truth. And it was kind of, once the adults saw that we were serious and we were going to do, you know, do a good job of what we were trying to do, we built that trust in, you know, with different churches and everything, I think people started to say, you know, this is important. And they were honoring, in a way, of this kind of youthful enthusiasm coming out of our group and saying, yeah, let's let them talk to their peers.
Lila, I first heard about you after one of your undercover videos came out. I couldn't believe it. It was shocking. How old were you when you started to do undercover investigations?
Well, the undercover work really started when I was a freshman at UCLA.
Okay.
And I left, you know, San Jose, went to UCLA because I thought I really was driven with a pro-life cause motive. I wanted to get an education, of course, but I also wanted to see what I could do to really impact people beyond San Jose and at a big, diverse university.
Then how did the idea come about? I mean, as a freshman in college, how old were you?
18.
18 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, you're 18. You're now of legal age. So, you know, depending on what you're doing, you can get in trouble for it. Was it your first idea going, hey, we should go undercover with a video camera and see what lies we can uncover?
Well, you know, Ryan, undercover work, thankfully, it's not something I certainly was able to invent. Live action didn't invent it or anything like this. I mean, it's been around for years, and it's been used in the pro-life movement for years. And there are groups, you know, there's a group out of Texas called Life Dynamics, and I studied some of their work. And, you know, they did an investigation back in 2002. They surveyed over 800 clinics using a caller posing as a 13-year-old girl on the phone, saying that she basically was the victim of abuse and asking for an abortion. And in 91% of those clinics told this little girl, who they thought was a little girl, that they had a don't ask, don't tell policy about sexual abuse.
Now, that's against the law, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's 100% against the law.
Absolutely.
Now,
yep.
Were there ever criminal charges filed?
You know, it's tricky there. And certainly after with Live Action's investigative work, we've been in touch with you know, district attorneys, different police officers. I'm in touch still with certain detectives working on different things. A clinic in Alabama was put on probation after we released an investigation because they did a follow-up project and they discovered multiple violations at the one clinic. So there certainly has been, and there was a woman who went before a grand jury trial in Indiana after we did an investigation there in Indianapolis. So our work has certainly led to legal action and criminal prosecution.
Probation seems a little light.
Absolutely, it is
light. Especially for what's going on.
And that's the real tragedy, Ryan, because we're dealing with, first of all, this human rights abuse, attacking the child. The woman is, you know, it's against a woman's real well-being in every aspect. But also a whole industry has risen up in our own communities across our country that's fed by the government. I mean, Planned Parenthood, the biggest abortion provider, gets almost $500 million from the government, from us, from taxpayers.
Right. It is. It's taxpayers.
And it's an industry that is making money off of the hurt of women and the killing of children. And there's so many other abuses and illegal activity that's happening in association with it, like sexual abuse cover-up, which we've been documenting for years, even the aiding and abetting of sex trafficking, medical misinformation and lies to women. There's a racism that has fueled some of the history of the abortion movement. So there's so many different aspects to this that we are working to expose.
Well, and you're doing a great job of it. And I want to expose some of that to our listeners. And I know it's a sensitive subject, but we've got to shed light on it. We really do. Unfortunately, Planned Parenthood has $500 million or close to it in government funds. Add to that all the money that they raise on top of that, and they've got a great PR campaign. There's a phenomenal video. We're going to post it on our Facebook page where you show Cecile Richards talking about, well, if Planned Parenthood gets defunded, women aren't going to be able to get mammograms. And I saw Maxine Waters say the same thing on TV. And I remember thinking, I didn't know that you did that. Mm-hmm. When you go to their website, they talk about reproductive health and they talk about how we're here for women and they're fighting for women. Talk about some of the series of videos that you've done. You've got one on gendercide. Explain a little bit to our listeners what gendercide is and then Planned Parenthood's involvement in gendercide.
Absolutely. And first, I want to just say and respond to something you were saying, Ryan, which is such a good point, which is this is a very sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that any woman or man who's been involved with an abortion knows that there is a path for healing for them and that God already has forgiven them if they just want to reach out and ask for that from God and forgive themselves.
Absolutely.
And there's a path to healing. And, you know, so many have been hurt by an abortion in our culture. But that woundedness is something God wants to heal. And together, we have to heal our country and make it a country that protects the woman, the child, protects everyone.
Well, and oftentimes, she had no idea what she was getting into because the clinics are lying to women. They're giving misinformation. They're not giving real scientific information. And you're exposing that all the time via phone calls and undercover videos. So let's talk about some of those.
Absolutely. Well, Live Action, in the last year, one of our bigger campaigns with our Gendercide Sex Selective Abortion in America series. It's a 5-part series. And we had investigative teams go all across the country documenting sex selective abortion techniques that are used by Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry. And we went into this project, Ryan, because we're seeing, you know, and different advocates, even feminists that would say they're in support of abortion, have been very alarmed by what they're calling the war on baby girls. In fact, the cover of you know, Time magazine was the war on baby girls.
I just saw that.
And it came out recently. And it just was talking about how we're missing over, some say, up to 160 million girls in our world today because they've been targeted mostly by abortion and then by infanticide for extermination. Yeah. And that's gendercide. That's female feticide is, you know, a more technical term. And, you know, people say, oh, it's a problem in India, in China, the demographics, the ratio between men and women is so skewed, thrown off, that people are saying it's going to cause huge problems, social issues. It already is, and economic problems for the country. But, you know, people don't realize it's happening here in America. And even Santa Clara County, where I'm from in California, in certain populations, the gender ratios are more skewed than they are in mainland China because certain communities are killing off or not having the girls. They're just having the boys. So this is sexism at its most violent because it's attacking that little girl when she's the weakest.
Yeah.
And it's fueled by all kinds of backgrounds for all kinds of reasons, but it's the abortion industry and some of the founders of Planned Parenthood and some of their you know, ideologues, you could say, that were behind some of the sex-selective abortion techniques that were exported to India and into China because it was used as a form of population control. Because if you're a population controller, you want to go after the girls because they're the ones who are going to have the children and have more children. And so it was a great way for some of these population controllers to target girls in the womb. And so we documented this happening in the United States, Planned Parenthood clinics advising, facilitating late-term violent sex-selective abortions of little girls.
They were saying wait to 4 or 5 months to make sure.
Yes.
Here's what I also know, and I know people think that I'm an alarmist or I'm exaggerating. The price of an abortion goes up the longer you wait. It benefits them financially if a girl waits 4 or 5 months because it costs more. It all is part of a plan, and we know this plan. You're covering that plan. But it's even more dangerous for women the later and the later that you get.
It's exactly right. And, you know, Ryan, one of the clinics we exposed in Austin, Texas, which was part one of the series. And, you know, the nurse there was telling our journalist that she should wait until she was 24 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
In order to have this abortion, this child could survive outside of the womb in order to confirm the sex of the child that it was a girl. So she could be sure to exterminate, eliminate that little girl so she could try again for a boy. And she ends the session, the counseling session, with, "We hope you get your boy," advising the woman how she can use Texas Medicaid as if she's going to have the baby to get a free ultrasound to confirm the sex. And then here's the Planned Parenthood calling card. Once it's a girl, call us. We'll take care of it at as late as 24 weeks.
Isn't that against the law?
Well, I mean,
it's
certainly a form of fraud in that you're abusing the system for an abortion when it's meant for women that want to have their children.
It's so frustrating when people don't get prosecuted for breaking the law. It's a sacred cow organization. It's a taboo topic. Well, we don't want to talk about that. It makes everybody uncomfortable. And yet it's defrauding the people of Texas. It's defrauding the Medicare system. It's lying to the women, and it's harming women. It's gendercide. It's what you talked about.
Exactly. And, you know, even in Arizona, we exposed two different clinics. In Arizona, it's illegal to perform sex-selective abortions or to advise them. They have a statute. 4 states in our country have statutes, but, you know, there's no federal statute. Even the UK, Australia have laws against sex-selective abortion, even India.
Why don't we?
That's a great question. And we don't, because the supposed pro-women advocates are fighting tooth and nail every day on Capitol Hill to prevent every legislation that they think in any way hurts what they call a woman's right to choose.
Lila, how can you be pro-woman
exactly
and not want to stop sex-selective abortion?
In fact, a poll was done and 76% of Americans want a ban on sex-selective abortions. The vast majority of women agree with this. No matter their position on abortion or anything else, attacking a little girl in the womb because she's a girl is wrong. But, you know, this calls to mind a bigger question, which is, if it's not okay to kill the child in the womb because of their sex, why is it okay for other reasons? And I think that the power of this investigation was to get people thinking, what is it that we value about the child, if it is that we value them for their sex or not for their sex? And how do you define the value of the child in the womb? Because if the child in the womb is something that can be discardable, if abortion isn't a crime, if abortion isn't a human rights abuse, then abortion should and can be had for any reason.
Yeah, that's right.
And we shouldn't limit it. But if you start to limit abortion, you have to ask, why am I limiting abortion? Why do I think sex-selective abortion is wrong? Well, because something is wrong with abortion.
That's right.
Of any child, no matter the sex, no matter the reason for the abortion, that it's because that's a child.
Lila, we've got a lot of people listening, and we've been talking about this issue for almost 40 years now, and we're not going to stop anytime soon, but I don't want to leave this program without allowing our listeners to help. So what is it that the person at home or in the car listening right now, what can they do to end this industry, to make a difference so that we can win this pro-life movement?
You know, we're all called to be involved in the movement for the culture of life in America, because the culture of life is really the culture of Christ.
Yeah.
because he came to bring us life. And he loves every human being. We're made in his image and likeness. And that child in the womb is our brother, our sister, that we're called to protect. And so I'd say the first thing is educate yourself. Make sure you know some of the facts about abortion, about Planned Parenthood, about this problem in our country. Get connected with Live Action online, Live Action on Facebook, liveaction.org, our news site, Live Action News, and start educating yourself. Mm-hmm. Number two, take that and get involved in the pro-life movement. With your knowledge, that's power, that's responsibility. And sure. You can go out, and there's so many local pro-life efforts, whether it's 40 Days for Life. If you're a student, we have different resources for you. Our magazine Advocate will send it to you for free. Start getting involved in your high school, your college. Make sure your church has a full-time pro-life ministry. Educating, being bold, going out into schools, going out into, you know, your even in your workplace, making sure that people know the truth, have access to some of this truth. You could save a life just by being willing to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And the final thing I would say is pray. You know, prayer must inform everything we do. And talk to God and say, you know, God, I want to do something about this. Show me what I can do. And then take some bold acts and put yourself out there a little bit. Get uncomfortable.
Sure.
And start to get involved in this movement. And I think with prayer, with education, and reaching out to the people around us, getting involved in local efforts, getting involved politically, all of these different things are so important. We really will, if Christians rise up, if people of faith rise up, we can put an end to this injustice.
I agree.
But we have to be willing to put ourselves out there. We have to be willing to stand up.
Yeah. What do you have planned for the future? What's the future of Live Action? What's your future? Are you going to continue to do these things?
Live Action is growing. We opened our office in Arlington. We still have a team out in California and really all over the country. But really two major things and two major initiatives. And the first is to create powerful content, media, you know, investigative journalism, exposing these abuses, speaking about the dignity of the human person, educating people, and secondly, to build networks of people that can be educated and inspired and then activated to stand up for the truth, particularly young people. We always have focused on young people at Live Action, but we also speak the truth to the media, to politicians, you know, share it with other groups, to share with their, you know, their networks, because if people knew the truth, especially our young people, and then they were given ways to get involved, it's amazing what can happen and what we're seeing happen in our country. More Americans than ever before say they're pro-life, the polling tells us. And this is a movement that's only growing. So that's why Live Action will continue to do that aggressively. We're building our team. We're building our outreach. And, you know, I as long as God, you know, calls me, I'll certainly be involved and helping, you know, push that forward. And you know, my life is dedicated to the culture of life and doing what I can for it. And, of course, to Christ first. So whatever he has, I'm excited to see what he has.
That's fantastic. Is social media helping out? Is it helping
Absolutely.
This process?
Absolutely. And, you know, social media is such a powerful tool to use for sharing the truth. And Live Action, our Facebook, for example, it's bigger than Planned Parenthood. We're at over 400,000 people.
It's got to drive them crazy. Can you imagine looking at that going, how could we not get more?
Well, it's just a testament to that people want the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, half of our people on Facebook are teenagers between the ages of 13 and 17. And about 80% of those, so this is over, you know, 180,000, are teenage girls, 13 to 17 years old. This is an army of girls. And these are just girls we, you know, this, compared to the girls that are out there that we haven't even been able to connect with yet. It's amazing because young people want something to stand up for. They're being given every day the junk of our culture, which is the sexualization of children, which is that, you know, sex is not precious and something for marriage. Instead, it's something you can experiment with and just use. And you know, it's not something sacred. And therefore, they get themselves in situations where they're even thinking about abortion because of teen pregnancy rate. Young people are being, you know, pushed materialism and all of these different things, you know, relativism. You know, there's no truth. There's no God. But they're hungry for something substantive. They're hungry for real love. And that's why this movement is so compelling when young people begin to connect with it, because they're fighting for something bigger than themselves. And they're fighting for something. They're fighting for love.
Yeah.
They're fighting for innocence, for the child in the womb, for the protection of every young girl and young boy to really live out their dreams, which isn't found in the hookup culture and drugs and depression and all the things that we're struggling with so much today and materialism. But it's found in loving your neighbor as yourself. And that's, of course, the teachings of Christ.
Yeah.
And so that's what's so beautiful about this movement is it's really a way for young people to find meaning and to find the meaning, which is the truth that we're created in God's image and likeness and we are so loved by God.
Oh, Lila, thanks for coming down. I appreciate your courage. I appreciate your willingness to do a good job and to put yourself out there and be the tip of the spear. I know our listeners have been encouraged by this program. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
If you'd like to learn more about the work Lila Rose and Live Action does, we'll have their link on our website. Also, I want to mention the Advocate magazine that we talked about. The next issue is 40 Years of Roe, How We Lost a Generation. And that's going to be a great issue. I think it'll be very helpful for you and for your kids. Also, don't forget, we're going to put a video on our Facebook page talking about some of the myths of Planned Parenthood. Again, the place to start is drjamesdobson.org. Again, drjamesdobson.org. If you prefer to call us for this information, our number is 877-732-6825. And I'd be remiss if I didn't again add that we are a listener-supported ministry, that we can't continue our radio broadcast or our fight for the unborn without your prayer and financial support. You can give online by clicking the Donate tab, again at drjamesdobson.org, or when you call, our number one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks for spending time with us today, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.